Welcome to EB5 Investment Voice, where attorney insights intersects with immigration investments. If you are a foreign investor, domestic fund manager, or enterprising entrepreneur and want to get the most out of the EB5 program, you have come to the right place. I'm Mark Deal, and I'll be your co-host on this journey. I'm joined by your host, Mona Shaw, and other attorneys at Mona Shaw & Associates, as well as immigration leaders from around the world. So let's get into EB5 Investment Voice.
Mona, Rebecca, over 100 episodes, and this time we're going to try something not just a little different, but drastically different.
We are indeed, Mark. And this particular episode has taken an awful lot of work. But we thought it was very important. As you know, we are also going through this global pandemic, which has really just been unprecedented and affected every walk of life.
Yes. And Mona, of course, EB5 projects have also been affected during this time.
So what we decided to do was to talk to projects across the country.
From small to large projects in such a variety of industries, such as real estate, technology, transportation, manufacturing, healthcare, among others, and from different locations. Actually, Mona, we spoke to projects from one end of the country to the other.
Yeah. But of course, urban metropolitan areas like New York City have been hit far harder than other places. But still, it was important to listen to what the projects had to say.
Yes. So Mona, why did we decide to take on this project within EB5 Investment Voice?
You ask me now after all of this effort. So there are reasons. The first reason is that investors are so anxious as to how projects are managing. Many investors don't really understand the concepts and how job creation works. So they are worried, would the project still be able to create jobs? Would they be able to complete construction, etc.? Other investors, and quite frankly, developers too, are more worried about the hit to the economy. How will the project survive and would they survive? And I would say thirdly, and this is something which is a little perhaps more academic, responses to pandemics have often followed a pattern from initial denial to panic and anxiety, which is what we've seen, to a period of adjustment, which is perhaps what we're starting to go through. And finally, we're hoping the establishment of a new normal. And when I say we're hoping, because we really need some sanity here. And if there is going to be a new normal, we want to be able to articulate this to our listeners so that we know how we're going to move forward.
Yeah. And what would a new normal be for EB5?
Well, that's a good question, Rebecca. The questions are, will we actually see what's called counter-cyclical behavior? Will investors move away from traditional hospitality projects, perhaps a move towards businesses, pharmacy, tech, transportation?
Well, Mona, I'm just going to have you back up for a second. We keep hearing counter-cyclical or defensive industries thrown around all over the news, all over the web. What does that actually mean?
Okay, so counter-cyclical or a defensive industry are those that do well in economic downturns, other than Jeff Bezos, who does well in both. Since the demand for their products and services continue regardless of the economy, it's kind of a niche industry, financial performance negatively correlated to the overall state of the economy. And these projects also tend to move in a direction that is opposite to the general economic trend, meaning that appreciation occurs during times of a recession and depreciation in value occur in times of economic expansion. So that's why it's called counter-cyclical.
Yeah, and it's sometimes hard to find a counter-cyclical project. It's very difficult to find a project that will do so well in economic downturns, but we have seen it in the past. For instance, in the financial crisis back in 2007-2008, we've seen recession-proof projects such as food and beverage industry. People have to eat. We're going to see that. We've seen the information technology, which is one of the fastest growing sectors in the U.S., and that occurred during that time as well as the health and senior service industries and transportation. One of the other industries we have seen is retail. Not in the way you're thinking, you know, people are not spending on new furniture or clothes. It doesn't make sense to do that. But what we have seen is that consumers are spending on thrift stores, for instance. So we have seen, and I've gotten this from the CNN money, that there was a 10% downturn of clothing stores back in 2009, but thrift stores actually increased by 35%.
Yeah. Well, the point is, there are recession-proof projects, but as we are in unprecedented times, all projects will have to adjust to new norms. Like, as you're saying, food and beverage right now, what are we seeing? We're seeing Uber Eats and Deliveroo. So transportation and technology are more in demand, but not in the way you might have thought.
Exactly. So we've seen some of our projects, such as New Ride Transportation Group or PropMix, which are transportation, of course, is a transportation industry, and where we've seen technology come together and also the health industry, where they're providing transportation to these sectors, and as well as PropMix, which is a real estate technology platform that has shown how the real estate right now is more technology driven.
Yeah. Well, while there may be a reluctance right now to invest into hospitality, I mean, this has to be short term because major cities worldwide will not be able to recover until the hotel market recovers, because the hotel market and the airline market are critically connected. And I am sure that not only will the federal government in the US, but in other countries too, they will have to focus on this if they want their cities to get back to normal.
Well, what we say, the new norm.
Yes. So, Rebecca, we're talking up in the air, but we have interviewed 13 plus regional centers and projects. Initially, we did have a list of 25. We've had to cut it down. So, Rebecca, I don't want people to jump to the end of this podcast and not listen to it, because I think that there was a lot of very, very good material. But let's put a little synopsis there for everyone. What did we learn from the different projects?
Well, Mona, you know, there were a number of really good points that came out. Nothing that was new to us, but it was a good way to refresh all these points and for all our investors to understand what to look for. Also, the pandemic is just so different. And so some of the lessons that were brought out during the interviews were, one, flexibility and diversification.
We
also know, and which we have told all our investors, structure of the project.
Yeah.
Then we've had the experience of developers.
Another important issue.
Exactly. And as we discussed earlier, recession-proof or counter-cyclical projects. And most importantly, which actually I learned from all of this, you know, COVID-19 happening, is being patient and seeing where things are going to move forward now.
Yeah. You know, flexibility is so important. The flexibility and diversification. You had Noreen Hogan talk about the canary in a coal mine or a black swan analogy. And the fact that if a project is actually going to go down, perhaps COVID-19 just precipitated the event. But at the end of the day, EB-5 is supposed to be flexible. It is flexible financing.
Right, Mona. And what I also liked from Noreen Hogan from CMB is that she also discussed assets, owning your assets and preserving assets, which we also heard from New Ride Transportation Group, and is that they own their own assets and they also employ drivers. So they're in a, I don't want to say win-win situation, but they're better off than companies such as Uber and Lyft, where they rely on the drivers who have their own assets.
That's true. But it's also, structure is also very important. And I think that was brought out by several different speakers. Deb Williams from EB5 Global really harped on about the fact that if structure is there, we can weather the storm. Then we have Sebastian Stubbe from Pine State Regional Center, who gave us the structure with bridge financing, which is certainly a good option at the time. Of course, Steve Shanisha, arm's length dealer, third party regional center, he looks for strong, creditworthy projects, and a structure is essential for him.
Exactly. And then we have Steve, who mentioned, as we said, the structuring of projects where he's an arm's length regional center, but then we had the opposite of where we've had developers such as Sushant Reddy, who are the actual developers of projects, but who are not regional center owners. So I think experience matters, as we were discussing earlier.
Yeah, well, experience, again, Noreen brought that out. Henry Lieberman, he was one of the oldest regional centers. I mean, what more experience can they have? They also brought this issue out, that experience of developers really does matter. And underwriting is important. We learned that from Dan Healy of Civitas. One more issue, Rebecca, I thought was very interesting, which was brought out by Doug Anderson from the New Hampshire EB5 Regional Center. They operate a ski resort up in New Hampshire. And he pointed out how he believes the new norm is going to work, that recreation is going to be very different moving forward. People aren't so keen to jump onto a plane anymore, and they would rather drive, even if they have to drive 3 or 4 or 5 hours, but they want to drive somewhere in the US and be out in the open, something healthy, something like a ski resort. So that whole change of attitude helps their particular area of expertise and their industry.
And I think we're going to see that moving forward. As we were discussing, we mentioned recession-proof projects, counter-cyclical projects, but as you mentioned, changing with the time. And now that new norm, as with Doug's project, we'll see that with the transportation industry. Even Joni Williams with Watercrest Regional Center, considering hers is a healthcare senior living assisted, which is an essential service.
Right.
That it's needed for seniors.
Right. And of course, the tech projects. And the interesting thing is, as we saw last year, there were several tech projects on the market who did struggle to get investors in comparison to the hospitality projects. But as Umesh points out, they are going to be the ones moving forward, perhaps, who will keep the confidence of the investor, especially as something like PropMix is so flexible, where they're now using their energies towards refinancing and making money. And they can do things like
virtual appraisals, Mona, that Umesh had mentioned.
That's right. Where you can have an appraisal without actually going to a building or going to a house. That's kind of cute.
And needed right now.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's where we see technology is going to make another boom. But to our last point, Mona, as we mentioned, patience. We have a lot of NYC developers who are very optimistic at this moment.
Yeah, that's true.
We spoke with Glenn LaMattina from NRIA and Richard Marquard from LCP Group, who were very optimistic, as well as George Zhu from Century Development Regional Center, about New York just being such a resilient state, and that they believe that anything happens to New York, we're going to bounce back and come back to the market very strong.
I'm sure. And I'm sure we're going to have more podcasts in discussing where the market is going and where it's moving on, because we could talk for a long time,
yes.
But we don't. But I'm sure our listeners are now like, okay, you guys shut up and let us listen to the actual interviews.
Well, Mona and Rebecca, thank you so much for the time that you've put into these discussions with the regional centers and developers. And so buckle up, EB5 Investment Voice listener, because we have about an hour and a half of great discussions going forward, and I'll catch you on the back end of this episode.
Hi, Noreen.
Thank you, Mona, for inviting CMB back to your show.
Somehow, some way, every single project is being affected because every single person is being affected.
Absolutely. Just because maybe your whole portfolio isn't hospitality, for example, I mean, the capital markets themselves are deeply impacted by this COVID-19 pandemic. So even if your underlying project that the EB5 investors are invested into isn't a hospitality, it isn't a multifamily, but if the loan is maturing, for example, whether it's through a refinance or through a purchase, because of the capital markets being in such a fragile state right now, those refinances are taking longer. The purchases of the underlying asset are put on hold because people don't know how the underlying asset and portfolio that they have are going to be impacted. And so it's a true ripple effect through the economy. I truly believe that everyone is impacted by this.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. So what about your projects, Noreen? How are you managing?
As you know, Mona, with CMB, we don't invest in just one asset class. But I will tell you that when you take a look at the true effect that this pandemic has had on us, it's obviously most impacted the underlying hospitality assets that we have. And so you have to face the facts.
Yeah.
And our approach is that we're proactive. So as soon as this happened, we reached out to our limited partners in every one of our projects and said that, as the general partner, we're reaching out to our borrowers. We have loan agreements with all of them, and our borrowers have an obligation to notify us if there's a material adverse effect going on at the project, whether it's, for the operations or at the construction level. And so our approach has been proactive. whether it's hospitality, whether it's multifamily, whether it's logistics and distribution facilities. But to really hunker down to your question, our hospitality assets are the most affected and impacted right now. But what we have done as the general partner is we've reached out, and most times the borrower's reaching out to us, telling us of the impacts after the notice we sent out. And then we're working together with the senior lenders, because the whole idea is this a canary in a coal mine situation where this hotel, for example, was underperforming and now, you know, COVID-19 has really brought that to light? Or is it this black swan event that requires essentially everyone coming together to provide flexibility for this asset?
That's a very interesting concept, Noreen, because I didn't really think of that before. You're right. Canary in the coal mine, it could possibly be. And I suppose that just shows, you know, that which project one goes into really will have an effect even at this time, because if they were underwater anyway, then this whole pandemic is going to bring that project down much faster than anything else.
That's exactly right, Mona. And so that's how we're taking a look at our projects. And right now it's initially the hospitality. And we're saying, is COVID-19 essentially a signal that this project can't survive hurdles that come its way? Or is it something that the borrower and the senior lender and then the EB5 mezz piece in our case, that we need to come together and say, look, this is a really well-performing asset. And when an entire country and really a lot of the world is shut down, you can't expect for a hotel to continue to pay debt service. It's just, it would be too much of a financial burden. But, you know, flexibility doesn't mean that we shouldn't be made whole in the end. And so it's figuring out constructive ways to work with all parties involved to preserve the asset and to make sure that our limited partners have their 10 jobs that are created, and then also ultimately see that return of capital, which is incredibly important.
Where are your projects located? Because surely that makes a huge difference as to recovery time.
So we have 15 different regional centers that cover, I believe, over 18 states, because we have some regional centers that cover multiple states. We have projects in second tier cities, but we also have projects in the Miami and Fort Lauderdale area. And so I would say that we're spread across the United States. And I think that we're taking partnership by partnership approach. And some of those projects that are in the second tier, the smaller cities, time is only going to tell, but those might not be as impacted because, you know, COVID-19 hasn't ripped through them like, you know, unfortunately firsthand in New York,
right?
In Chicago.
At one time, most of the investors were coming to these big cities, New York, LA, Seattle, and these were the cities which are being affected the most. You know, Noreen, there are two really important issues which are coming out of this pandemic. One, of course, as we've just discussed, is if your project is underwater, anyway, this is only going to make it much, much worse or bring it to the light much faster. But for an investor who is in a project where, say, the construction has been paused, fine, the construction will continue when it eventually does and the project will go ahead. But what about the projects which are going to go under because of this pandemic and the investor will probably not get his capital returned?
That's a great point, because we always have to think about this from an investor standpoint. And so you brought up two really, really important points and actually two different inflection points, if you will, that we look at as a regional center. And so one of them is, where is the project at? Is it still under construction? Because as you mentioned, the big thing, if a project is still under construction, then potentially the jobs haven't been created. You could speak to this, but each city is impacted differently in terms of, you know, what is an essential worker. My understanding from taking a look at the various projects that we have across the United States, construction sites in some cities such as LA is being halted to a very slow level. And then in other parts of the country, it's actually construction is considered essential and the project's continuing to move on. We have projects that are in both situations, which are construction is slowing and others construction is continuing. What we take a look at is the preservation of the 10 new American jobs. And so it goes back all the way to the underwriting, Mona, which is, I know you can speak to it, how important it is to have completion guarantees in there and then also different types of insurance. So that way, when there's interruptions, that once COVID-19 and this pandemic starts to slow down, construction will resume. But sometimes it does take, even at the construction stage, when you have an interest escrow, which has your interest and the senior's interest in it, it still takes the parties coming together to say, this is going to be a great project. The slowdown or the standstill in construction can't halt this project.
Yeah, actually, that happened a lot here in New York after Superstorm Sandy. A lot of projects were put on hold because of the repairs and everything that was required. So there was a delay in completing, but the project did complete, which is good because at least investors we know will get their green card. What about the second issue, Noreen? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, again, it goes back to that canary in the coal mine versus, you know, where are projects that you need to make sure that are preserved because they're well performing. And so you just have to figure out how your projects are doing, make sure that they are performing, and that if they're performing, be flexible, is my opinion, but be made whole, because you shouldn't give up, you know, the profitability of the partnership in order to let the developer preserve theirs. And that's exactly the same way that the senior looks at it. And it's also a way to figure out, does this project have a path moving forward? For us, we're lucky that we've done a great job in this underwriting. And what we're looking at is preserving these assets, being flexible, and getting them back and operational.
Wow, those are excellent points. Well, thank you very much for coming on Investment Voice and giving us your feedback as to what's going on, as well as giving investors who've not only come to you and maybe future investors a little more insight as to how you guys think. And I would say it would also be giving people a little more encouragement, at least satisfying their fears at this point.
If you're a potential investor, figuring out a great regional center to work with, and also a great immigration attorney who always has their finger on the pulse, not just, you know, at the time you're making a decision, but is there for you through the whole process. So that's the most important, because yeah. Mona, when we're at a conference or when we're traveling, we never could have closed our eyes and said, hey, I bet in a year from now, in April of 2020, we're all going to be working from home and we're going to have this global pandemic.
Right,
but that's
right.
Why choosing strategically from the beginning sets you up for success in the long run.
I couldn't agree more. Thank you, Noreen, and I'm sure we're going to have you back. There's lots and lots of topics we can discuss.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Mona. I really appreciate it.
Hello, Glenn. Thank you for coming on Investment Voice.
Good to be on here with you, Mona. Thank you so much.
So many investors, even from your projects, have been contacting us, as well as just general contacts, wondering what on earth is going on with their EB-5 investment. For many of the investors, it is their life savings, so they are naturally very worried.
Yes, I can understand that point. I mean, I could assure all investors, EB-5 investors and our regular investors, we're still moving forward with some projects during this time of the COVID-19 virus.
Are you not on our lockdown, Glenn?
No, our projects in Florida are still under construction. Our projects in Pennsylvania and New York are temporarily shut down. In New Jersey, our multifamily building has temporarily shut down, but we're also building luxury single families that are under contract. So we have an exemption on those.
I see.
Those projects are still moving forward.
Okay, so we have heard a lot of banter about New York, New Jersey, the metropolitan area, really going to taking a downturn following the COVID-19. And if you have luxury property, do you feel that your investments are not going to come through?
No, I think it's just going to be the reversal. Once the lockdown is over and people get back to a new norm, I don't think the old norm is ever going to be what it was. I think properties in New York and New Jersey or the metropolitan area will flourish. And New York is a market that you can't shut down. It's the lifeblood of the world. Everybody wants to be in New York or New Jersey or the metropolitan area.
So you feel that the pundits who say that one should not buy real estate in New York or New Jersey at this point are wrong?
I definitely think they're wrong. Like anything else, this was going to cause some good opportunities for developers to be able to maybe expand their current projects. Mm. Like anything else, the economy has to keep moving. And the U.S. government is 100% behind getting the economy back on track with the stimulus packages they're doing, and everything between the states and federal governments are producing more and more stimulus to get people back to work, get people back to spending money, and get real estate moving again.
Right, because I'm not really worried about your Florida projects. It is more the New York, New Jersey projects that the investors are coming to us about.
Now, I could assure you and the investors that our projects are moving forward. We do have more projects coming for the EB5 network, and we feel very strong that real estate will still be the major focus to get the economy back on track.
Glenn, are all of your projects residential, or do you have hospitality in the mix?
No, all our projects are residential. That is the backbone of our development. We have a little bit of commercial mixed into some of the projects, but they're all residential, either luxury apartments or condos.
Right. So you, the hospitality, not any hospitality, because that's the industry which we feel is going to be hit the hardest.
No, I agree with you. I mean, people right now, once the economy goes back to which I'll call a new norm again, aren't going to be spending money to travel right away. So I feel sad for the hotel businesses. I feel sad for the travel businesses. But I believe people still need a place to live. People are going to look for opportunities to buying their places to live, and things will be moving quickly. Contracts are already sold, with probably 4 new contracts coming in this week. We're doing what's called virtual selling. Our realtors are...
we're certainly learning about the virtual. Glenn, one quick question. When Nick came on the show, we discussed at great length equity plus EB5, because you guys do get a lot of private equity. You must have seen all of those inquiries drying up, correct?
No, to the contrary. One of the parts of the CARE Act allowed people to borrow against their 401k, allowing them to take money out, and they're investing with us. So that part of our business has definitely also increased.
Yeah, good to hear. All right. Well, thank you very much. We appreciate you letting us know how you all are faring during this difficult time. And we'd like to welcome Steve Stranitter from Cleveland International Fund Regional Center. Hi, Steve. Welcome to the show.
Pomona, how are you?
Very well, thank you. So, Steve, you've been in the EB5 world for a long time, since 2010, and you have a variety of projects. How are you managing right now?
Yes, well, we do real estate, so that's the one common theme of all the projects that we've done. We're an arm's length lender. We don't do our own projects. We lend to projects.
Right. So arm's length is you're a third-party regional center.
We're not
a developer.
Yes. So we do, and we have done multiple loans. We always structure our we raise money as equity into specific projects, specific entities, and then lend it out. We've done first mortgage lending. We've done mezzanine financing. We don't do equity. And we've done multiple projects with different developers, but all for different projects. In fact, typically, I would say the primary basis on what we select our projects on over the years has been the strength of the developer and their expertise and so forth. But within that, we've done retail, we've done hotel, we've done office, we've done healthcare.
So that was a previous ones. Do you have any current ones or ones which you've just had completed the offerings?
We just completed offerings around the change in the regulations.
As most
well
people
reported. Yeah. We did a healthcare, we did a second financing for University Hospitals, which is a major hospital system here. We had done one from them about 8 years ago, and we did another in advance of there was a project that once we hit November, the TEA designation changed, so we stopped because we could only raise up to that point at the lower level. But we don't have any current projects. Even in this environment, we continue to look for them, but we're really focused, if we do take on anything at this point, for them to be particularly strong creditworthy projects. We're not going to take anything, frankly, below first mortgage opportunities.
Right. So at this particular time, though, we do see a little bit of a downturn for a lot of real estate projects. I understand even the medical ones, I think, are suffering a little. I think everything is suffering.
Yes, yes. There's not a sector that's not suffering from that standpoint. Obviously, hospitality and restaurants are ones that are particularly affected right now. And I think we would be extremely cautious about moving into those. We were looking at a hotel project, and I guess we're still looking at it, but I think our view of it, even in the last month in terms of a new hotel, imagine that, a new hotel, is very, very skeptical. Our biggest issue right now, beyond potential new projects, which we're going to be really careful on, is just managing our current portfolio and what's going on with some of our outstanding loans and our borrowers.
Well, I think that's really what the investor wants to hear. They want to, they are very concerned, the ones who have already invested. And of course, there are people who are considering investing right now. Do you have any words of advice that you would like to share?
Well, we do have some that are in the restaurant space and in the hotel space, and they have been affected, as we know, all across the country. You know, we have orders here in Ohio, similar to other places. All of our projects are in Ohio. Restaurants are shut down right now. There's forbearance to all lenders, actually directed by the governor, related to mortgage interest payments. So like other lenders, we are honoring those things and working with our borrowers about how they can catch up on those down the line. Also with hotels, same sort of things. A number of hotels have actually closed temporarily. We're dealing with that. I think this is where it's really important what deal you struck however many years ago in making the loan, that you have the kind of security and you have the kind of collateral and you have the kind of relationship with your borrower that you can work through.
Steve, expand that a little bit. What do you mean by this is when it really matters what kind of structure and collateral you have?
Well, obviously, because beyond obviously getting the green card based on job creation, investors always want to get repaid and repaid in full. We do. You know, what we face now is some of our projects are in that same situation where they were intending or in the process of refinancing so that they could pay us back in that same kind of time frame. Is the market has collapsed for that in the immediate term. Not only the credit markets, but just, you know, what they could represent to any new credit provider. You know, for example, in the hotel space, typical credit lending for hotels look at the trailing last 12 months of revenue in order to determine whether they're going to make a loan. Well, we just shot a hole in that with what's going on with hotels in the last couple months. You sort of have to start over, you know, out of this recovery, which we believe will come, to then put yourself in a position to get a refinancing that will take your loan out. So, you know, bottom line, if you're well secured and you're in a good position, which goes back to how you originally structured the loan, you'll be fine. You'll just have to be patient. And this is part of the communication we're having with our investors, is it just may take longer. But if you're well secured, we can get through this and still get our investors their full capital contribution back.
That's excellent advice. And I think that is really, at this point, the only advice. You have to be patient. And you have to, I think, for investors, should really have a little bit of confidence in who they've invested in, which is why probably an investment in a regional center like yourself, where you've been out there and you know who the players are as far as the developers, who the right developer is, makes such a difference.
Yeah, we're trying to be, if anything, excessive in our communication. I've sent out multiple communications for investors and projects within the same month over the last couple months, just so they know what's going on and what we're doing and that we're talking to them.
Yeah. Well, fantastic advice. I think that your investors should at least remain very calm and patient. But thank you so much, Steve, for coming on the show and giving us your pearls of wisdom.
Oh, thank you very much.
Hi, Joan. It's good to have you back on EB5 Investment Voice.
Good to be back.
So to remind our listeners, you are the owner and proprietor of Watercrest Regional Center in Florida. What kind of projects do you have?
Yes, we do own a regional center, and we also are a developer, owner, and operator of senior living communities. Through our regional center, we've done 3 EB5 projects, all of which are assisted living and memory care communities. In this case, all 3 of them are in Florida, although we have communities now open in Georgia as well as South Carolina. Basically, we are providing very needed, need-driven services to seniors.
So it's definitely, it falls under the category of essential services. So I presume that you guys are all still working and you haven't closed down.
Oh, gosh, no. We are absolutely considered essential. In fact, We have right now four projects under construction, and they are continuing to progress with very little impact, because in every municipality where we have buildings under construction, because we are in the healthcare field and we're providing, ultimately once we open, services to seniors, we are considered essential. All of our workers are considered essential. And even though we have the stay-at-home policy, our people go to the communities all three shifts every day. And our communities themselves, during this time with COVID-19, are basically locked down to visitors, normal visitors, like family members, unfortunately. But essential people like hospice or doctors or emergency people are allowed to come in. But everyone gets tested, temperature tested, ask about symptoms, signing in, we keep a log.
So we are going through the different projects, the different EB5 projects. And I have to say, this is one of the first ones that's really, it's business as normal. There hasn't been any change I can see other than these small details that you've just enumerated. Do you see any difference in your business post the COVID-19, once we get out of all of this, and hopefully when everything gets back to normal?
I actually think that we could see an uptick in our business as a result of this, because I think a lot of people now who are sheltered in place at home and who have seniors in their homes, and we're actually hearing from people. We have people who are signed up already for our new buildings and they can't wait to move their loved one in.
I think a lot of people,
yeah, I think in some cases they've had enough. In other cases, they feel like the person, because of all the precautions we take and all of our care workers are wearing masks and gowns and everything, that their loved one will actually be safer in our community than they would be at home.
You know, you may not be wrong, because if they don't find a vaccine for this, this is something that we have to live with for the next year to 2 years before they really do find something. So, okay, well, excellent. Good to know. Well, this has been very useful, Joni. I really am glad that you have come on to a podcast to share these details. It is important for investors to understand what kind of projects they are going into and really the risks are involved, because this is not something obviously anybody could have seen, but it's something that we have experienced could happen again.
Absolutely. Very much important business to keep moving, and the world needs more senior living communities for sure.
Yeah, that's right. By the way, whereabouts in Florida are you located?
Oh, our home office is in Vero Beach, but we've got communities all over the state, both open and under construction. Our newest one that we just opened is in Winter Park, Orlando, and right before that in Naples. So lots of places.
Lots of places with lots of sun.
Yeah.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
We now have Umesh Harigopal from PropTech. Welcome, Umesh.
Hi, Mona.
So, Umesh, I understand that your EB5 project is a little different from the other EB5 projects that we've had, because yours is a tech project.
That is right. Exactly. I mean, we are mainly a tech company, and we are very different from the real estate and hospitality industries, typically where you see the EB5 projects. We started this last year. We launched PropMix, our company focused in real estate technology, not real estate as in physical real estate.
Right.
We are a tech company, and we launched sometime mid last year, 2019. And I guess the timing has been perfect given all the things that are happening in the market today.
That does give food for thought for when anybody is looking at different types of projects, because I know initially you did have a little bit of a hard time trying to convince people to come into technology.
Absolutely right. Yeah, we certainly had a lot of challenges kind of working, I wouldn't say against our other EB5 projects, but whenever we are measured against a real hotel or any other project in the hospitality industry, PropMix as a tech company, it was much harder for people to kind of comprehend what we do and try to understand and be able to make sure that they can actually invest in a tech company as part of an EB5 investment. But interestingly, past the COVID-19 realities now, there is literally no impact to our business. In fact, specifically our business, because we are in the real estate technology space, the refinancing volume has gone up crazily high in the last 2 months now.
Oh, gosh,
because
of course.
Of the interest rates going down, right?
Oof,
and our appraisal volumes, I mean, home appraisal volumes, home valuation, the loan requests, loans that are getting processed, the volume has gone up like crazy. And our teams have been working around the clock, I mean, meeting customer need. Suddenly, technology has become front and center to handle COVID. The only way to kind of continue to work in this environment is because of technology. And it is actually going to create a lot more new disruptions even post-COVID-19, right? Even past this point, a lot of companies are beginning to realize that they can be productive without having a huge office space and a huge real estate investment in an office space, right? So we see potential changes coming up in the real estate industry in general, both in hospitality as well as in commercial office space.
I happen to agree with you. Technology is a change. How long do you actually see, now you are in the real estate sector, how long do you actually see this affecting industries like hospitality and commercial real estate?
Yeah, there are a few simple realities that we see in COVID, right? I mean, I'm sure this is true for everybody observing the market today, is till there is a vaccine in place, till there's a treatment plan in place for COVID, there's going to be a few cycles of this lockdown and release in the economy and then lockdown again and then come back to release, et cetera, right?
Yeah.
And we expect that to kind of continue for the next 12 to 15 months easily before the travel industry and the related hospitality industry kind of begins to come back to life again in some kind of a full-fledged mode. It might not really come back to complete occupancy rates in any of these hotels potentially for the next 2 to 3 years.
The experts have said expect disruption until 2022, and you're right, until they get a vaccine. But thereafter, once they've got a vaccine, so when people do choose EB5 investments, I mean, obviously for the short term, in this period, you are certainly in a better position than most projects. But in the long term, how do you position yourself?
Yeah, even from a TEA perspective, specifically talking about the EB5 and what we are able to do as a tech company beyond COVID as well, right? Even the TEA designations that are so fluid these days because of unemployment numbers kind of fluctuating so much across different regions, we have the unique capability to be located anywhere in the country and be able to create employment and opportunity any part of the country where unemployment is high.
Yeah,
right?
You can move your office. That's not a big deal. I know you can be in the
exactly
TEA.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah, you could stay in the TEA, but what do you see in the long term as far as we investors? Okay, short term, you've got your jobs, you've got your green card, return of capital. How do you see that in the long term with your technology projects?
It goes back to the disruption that technology is able to create. There are like new models emerging altogether coming out of this COVID-19 realities, right? I mean, so the disruption is there, I would say, in the real estate industry itself, but purely technology, even not talking about specifically PropMix, technology is going to be the primary driver in the coming years for a new working models for people, right? How employment is going to change. It has already been on that path due to artificial intelligence and machine learning, a kind of this industrial revolution 4 that has been happening right under our nose, right? It has been going on for the last few years. But that is getting a new boost because of the realization of COVID-19 impact. So that is causing huge, huge disruptions.
You know. So you're offering a model whereby somebody can virtually go and inspect a house?
Exactly. We are offering a remote inspection capability so that, think of it as Zoom conferencing kind of a session, but then it is legally enforceable. This is a new way to use technology to simplify people's lives. While this comes out of the COVID needs, it will be certainly longer lasting just because it has suddenly simplified the business process of a loan underwriting process suddenly.
Well, I hear from you diversity and flexibility, and I think that's key when we do talk about projects. Umesh, thank you. I really appreciate that coming on to the show and sharing your thoughts and sharing what's been going on with your project during this difficult time of the coronavirus.
Thank you, Mona. Thank you for the opportunity, and it was enjoyable talking to you.
Welcome, Douglas Anderson from New Hampshire EB5 Regional Center.
Thank you, Mona. It's nice to talk to you.
So we can really literally say that we have been all over the country. So from one end of the country to the other. New Hampshire Regional Center, what are your projects?
Our main project is in Danbury, New Hampshire, near the capital of Concord. It's an expansion project to expand the ski resort called Ragged Mountain Resort.
So like everybody else, you had the shutdown, but I think New Hampshire was a little later than the rest of the country.
You know, Colorado shut down earlier than we normally close for the season, so that hurt. But fortunately, we got in, three quarters of the season for our peak revenue period.
Yeah, luckily that was the case. And I obviously, just like the rest of the country being shut down, what did you do? Did you have to furlough your employees or what have you done?
Yes, we furloughed all of our seasonal employees. We still have our management team in place, which are our long-term managers and general manager of the resort. Fortunately, they often look for, the seasonal employees are looking for regional work as seasonal employees. So that's not been so bad that we haven't been too hurt by that.
Right, right. So anyway, the investors obviously are looking at their green card as well as the permanent green card, as well as the return of the capital. So how far are you in the job process?
Well, as we all know, this tends to be a long process and sometimes longer than everyone would like. But yeah. Our raise was somewhat elongated, but that was helpful in that we were able to spend on the planned expansion with the new lifts, the new runs opening, some new housing and lodge remodels, and snowmaking. So we have finished that expansion and created the jobs. We've had two economic reports, and those are filed with the 829.
Oh, so you're at the 829 stage. So your investors can be satisfied that at least the jobs have been created.
Yes. Yeah, that's a very good thing. And so we're pleased to make sure that our investors have the jobs created. It's a very, very important thing for all of our investors.
Right. So that's one half of the equation. So they can give a sigh of relief there. And of course, everybody wants to understand about the return of the capital.
Yes. Being an at-risk business, we've had a good year. We have doubled our revenue since the beginning of this expansion as planned. So we're looking at that return of capital with this unknown virus and unknown time frame where we're looking at to do that and respond the best way possible.
Doug, do you feel that the virus is going to push back your ability to repay the investors, or will it stop it altogether?
Well, it's hard to say, Mona. The virus is, this is a very new and large impact, not only just us, but all of the ski resorts in the country and businesses. So it's unpredictable. So I think it will push it back. The unknowns are, when do we start business again? And
But seasonal, so it wouldn't be till the winter now. So at least if they had a vaccine by Christmas time, you'd be fine.
Yes, yes, that's entirely true. So we're anticipating a full opening for the next ski season. That's about 80 or 90% of our revenue. So that's a positive. The other positive thing, Mona, is that with this pandemic, people in the U.S. and in New England are looking to recreate in the open doors, outdoors, and close to home. As well, they want to distance themselves from people, and what better place to do that than a mountain resort?
You're absolutely right that we are looking at people changing their lives, and rather than get on a plane and go places when you can drive, because most of your people are local, right? They come from Boston and New York?
Yes, we have about 20 million people within a four-hour drive radius, Boston primarily, and New York as well. So we see customers from both of those areas. And yes, we're really expecting a lot more local traffic. So, you know, if everything works out, we could have a very good year next year, provided that Mother Nature cooperates with the snow. That was one of the major things that we added, was a lot of snowmaking. So that's been very helpful.
Oh, that's very good. And are you able to get any government assistance?
We are. This thing called Payroll Protection Plan, without going into the details, yes, we did get some government assistance. They were very responsive. We received some payroll monies for a carryover for us to get through a couple months of this pandemic while everyone is home effectively.
So, Doug, I wouldn't like to say that Ragged Mountain would be in the same bucket as your conventional hotel. It's not hospitality, it's more entertainment. And I think the point that you were trying to, that you did make, that people's attitudes are changing, is going to make a difference moving forward.
We think so. We're already planning for the end of this pandemic phase. The world will go on. And, you know, a bright side to what we see happening is that people really want to keep their vacation or their weekends simple. They want to be able to drive to a location. They don't want to have to get on an airplane. They don't want to go someplace far away on a long flight. They would prefer to attend more local areas for recreation. And we think we will be a beneficiary of that. So for us, we're planning on that happening and making accommodations for that. The recreational industry has been fairly recession-proof. Even in the United States, when there was a downturn in 2008, people still recreate. We think we'll be a beneficiary of that. And our type of outdoor activities and resorts will be beneficial after this virus hits. People will want to keep it local and keep it simple and stay away from crowds.
Right. I totally agree. It'll take a lot to keep me away from the ski resorts, ski slope. Thank you so much, Doug. Take care now.
Thank you.
We'd like to welcome back Devin Williams from EB5 Global. Welcome, Devin.
Thank you, Mona. It's good to be back.
I know you're a little bit of an old hand at this, and you've done podcasts with us before. You know the score, but I'm going to go straight into it. You have two hospitality projects. I know you have one in New York City, and I don't believe that's hospitality, right?
Yes, our New York project is not a hospitality project. That's a mixed-use project.
That's mixed-use. But your two hospitality ones, they're on the West Coast. So you know what I'm going to say. Now with the coronavirus, how are you managing at this point?
So this is obviously an unprecedented time with the coronavirus, something that nobody saw coming.
Yeah.
Hospitality has been very hard hit. One of the things that has really helped us with our projects is actually our structure. And we talked about this on one of our earlier podcasts that we did together. This is a great illustration of exactly what I was talking about in that podcast.
Yeah. It's so interesting that whenever we talk about sensible things like structure, it's always us women who do this. But just as a step back, Devin, just to remind everybody, you have a project, a hotel in Portland, Oregon. And where's the second one?
The second one is in San Francisco. So there are two different brands. They're two completely different markets. They're two completely different products, actually, of hotel. But the thing that they have in common is our structure. And so one of the things that we feel is so important and so overlooked in EB5, and really, I mean, this applies outside of EB5 as well, is looking at how the capital stack is structured in a project, because that's really going to either provide protection or provide added risk. One of the things that makes our projects unique and our company unique is that we believe in having very low leverage, as low as possible. You know, depending on how much EB5 you can raise or what the capital markets look like can sometimes dictate what that looks like. But in our case, for instance, on those two hotels, our Hyatt House in Portland has only 32% debt. And our San Francisco proper hotel has only 34% total debt. The reason that that's important is that interest expense is a fixed cost. And so that's something that you have to make those payments.
So you can handle those payments
every month.
Now. Right. Are both projects constructed and operational?
Yes, both those projects are open and they've been open for a couple of years. So the reason that the structure is so important is basically, you know, when you look at a project and you look at, for instance, the projections, you want to know that there's some buffer in there, that there's some protection. So you could miss your numbers by 5%, 10%, 15%, and the project is still going to be okay.
Right, right.
But you also have to prepare for the unexpected, you know, the things that you can't see coming.
This is such an unexpected.
and this is one of those things. And so it's not just, so what having low debt enables you to do, it doesn't allow you to be profitable in a time like this. You know what I mean? When your occupancy is down to 10%, you're not going to be profitable.
Right.
But if you have appropriate reserves and you have low debt, then you can weather the storm. And that's what protection in your capital stack is about. It's about being able to weather the storm so that you can get through this period and then ramp back up once this craziness ends. But it's not going to be a couple of months, you know.
No, this is going to, it's going to be a year to year and a half at least. And this is where we are seeing the projects which are not so well structured or well financed. They're not going to be able to survive.
No, they're probably going to foreclose.
Right.
Or sell it a loss. It's just not possible. You know, if you have 70, 80, 90% debt, you can't weather a storm.
That's true. Well, it's important because we do want our investors to understand, because our investors are worried and they do want to know what's going on with EB5 world. And they understand that in the US, we have, it's the richest country in the world. And yes, the government is helping, but it still requires, each project has a certain amount of structuring and capitalization that has to be done.
Yes, absolutely. And during this time, when the markets are like this, we're still looking for things to help further protect our hotels, because nobody has an endless supply of money to be able to, you know, you still have to make your tax payments, you still have to make interest payments. But one of the things that having low debt enables you to do is it enables you to have better negotiations with your lenders. So, you know, for instance, on our Hyatt hotel, and actually on both of our hotels, we have very healthy reserves. We have millions of dollars in reserves. So that enables us to continue to make payments and to continue to kind of fulfill our obligations. But for instance, with our Hyatt hotel, we got the bank to agree to 6 months of deferred interest. So we're not just deferred interest and payments of principal on the loan, with an understanding that we could also potentially extend beyond 6 months, but they just wanted to give 6 months for now. And then we take another look at the world. And if
see
we
how
extend,
it is.
So even though we have money to pay out of our reserves that we could be using, the banks are more willing to work with us because they know that we're not in a super risky position.
Yeah.
They know that we're going to be able to weather the storm because we don't have such crazy payments that are due. And so it's a little bit easier to have that conversation.
Devin, what about your New York's project?
So our New York project is a mixed use project, and that is actually in the final stages of construction, and it's delayed right now. It's not under construction at this moment.
Yeah.
But we have been exempted from the moratorium in New York. And so we are supposed to start the final phase of construction in the beginning of May. So we'll see if that still holds, but that's what is on target right now. That's our only debt project that we did where we raised EB5 debt instead of EB5 equity, but it also has a very low debt.
Thank you for coming on EB5 Investment Voice.
Thanks so much for having me.
And we'd like to welcome our next guest on. It's Sebastian Stubbe from Pine State Regional Center. Welcome, Sebastian.
It's great to be here. Thank you, Mona.
I understand you're in New York City, and unfortunately, you've actually suffered from COVID-19.
Yeah, I'm actually over the worst of it, so I can't complain too much. I'm in week 7 now. I tested positive earlier in March. A lot of coughing, but a lot of people had it worse than me, so I really can't complain too much.
You know, you're the second person, second regional center person who has had it that we've spoken to, and unfortunately both have been from New York City. We've kind of got it worse in New York City than anywhere else in the country, I feel. Anyway, your regional center is not in New York City. Your regional center is all the way down in Arkansas.
Yeah, the vast majority of our team is based in Little Rock, Arkansas. I obviously spend most of my time touring the world and looking in on our offices and representatives around the world. So my base is in New York, but my colleagues and the rest of the team are in Little Rock, Arkansas.
And what kind of projects do you currently have?
You know, Pine State Regional Center focuses on rural projects. You know, as you probably remember, Arkansas Capital, which is our mothership, is actually one of the oldest organizations in the industry. We were founded in the 1950s, well before the EB5 program itself. And we were founded as an economic development corp by the Rockefeller family. And what that effectively means is that we're a nonprofit organization.
We work very closely
with the state government of Arkansas and the surrounding states, focusing on any job-creating program that we can, and we've done.
But I believe that your current project is Big River Steel?
That is correct. So we're currently working on the second phase of the Big River Steel project. We closed the first phase last year and started the second phase in the fall and earlier this year.
Okay. So Arkansas isn't as affected as we are up here. but everybody has been affected.
Everybody has been affected, no question about it. We are very fortunate with our project because it's unique in a number of ways that I think will continue to protect EB-5 investors well. First and foremost being that the project itself is already fully financed. So the phase two expansion of Big River will double the size of the Big River steel plant.
Let me ask you, when you say you're already fully financed, what do you mean?
So Pine State used a structure called the bridge equity structure when we financed the first phase of the Big River Steel project, and we're now using the bridge equity structure for the second phase. What that means is that the USCIS will allow projects where the developer has the means and is willing to put in additional capital up front in a so-called bridge, and will allow us to then raise the EB-5 later. This allows projects, especially large projects, to get off the ground faster. They don't have to wait for the EB-5 raise to be complete. And so in the case of the first phase, we raised, they put in an additional $60 million up front, and construction was able to begin immediately. And then we raised that $60 million from EB-5 investors over the following 2 years.
We'll talk about the bridge rate, the whole bridge equity structure on a different show. But at this point, what our listeners really want to know is, how are you faring?
Well, so the great thing here is that in the second phase, the project developers, the owners of Big River Steel, put in an additional $100 million, and that is what we are now raising to replace. But the great advantage for an EB-5 investor is that they don't have to rely on our ability to raise the full $100 million. If we don't raise the full $100 million, it doesn't negatively impact the project. The project is fully financed. It would just mean that less of the bridge gets repaid. But the project itself was able to start construction immediately upon financing last summer. And therefore, today is well along on its construction, and very importantly, has already created all the necessary jobs. So an investor today has really removed and mitigated two of the primary risks, one being financing at a time when, obviously, during this COVID outbreak, financing has really dried up for
know,
any business.
Yes.
And secondly, the worry about having to create all these jobs at a time when a lot of projects are either dealing with construction bans or furloughed workers. Big River Steel has already created all the necessary jobs for the EB-5 raise.
But are your workers currently working right now, or are they furloughed?
No. Big River Steel, again, is quite fortunate. All of Arkansas has been relatively unaffected by coronavirus, but the northeastern corner, which is a very rural area, which is where Big River is located, has really not been affected. Big River Steel has taken lots of precautions, but is still fully operational. And as a result, the project continues on schedule. There are no construction bans, and jobs continue to be created. And again, we've already created enough such that even if no further jobs were created, the EB-5 raise would be safe for the investor.
That is really good to hear, Sebastian, because I do know that when we hear stories like yourself, there is an ease. It gives our investors an ease of mind, and certainly gives them the idea that, yes, their EB-5 projects are still running, they are still profitable, and we're getting money in from the government also.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I would add, if I may, that Big River Steel has, the second phase obviously has an additional advantage for investors, which is it is the expansion of an already profitable business. This is a business that is running on a 24 hours a day, 7 day schedule, producing high-grade steel. And as a side note, Big River does not make commodity steel, which is something that a lot of people make. It's oversupplied, not very valuable. Big River makes only high-grade specialty steel, which is very undersupplied in the United States. So they continue to operate and create cash flow every day, where obviously a lot of projects that are building something from scratch don't have the advantage of that cash flow generation.
Well, thank you, Sebastian. You know, certainly it's a different type of project. We try to vary up our projects for this show, and we really appreciate you coming on to the show.
My pleasure.
So welcome, Sushant. You're from Eagle Eye Property Group?
Yes, Mona. This is Sushant from Eagle Eye Property Group. I'm one of the co-founders for this property group, and as well as a partner overlooking at all the EB-5 investments.
Wonderful. So it is good to have a variety. We've had regional centers. I know you're not a regional center. You're a real estate developer who has done EB-5 around the country.
Yeah, thank you for having me on your show, as well as it's my pleasure to actually give us a much more a bigger audience to let us know and also give you as inputs about the, and also our thinking about how the market is going to affect the EB5 or how it is tending to shape it up, and also what our the messages that we convey to our existing investors, we could actually bring this back onto a broader scale as well.
Great. So first of all, let me ask you, where are your projects based?
Currently, we have a project in South Boston. It's a couple miles away from the financial district, as well as in Charlotte, North Carolina. In Charlotte market, it is in a submarket called the Concord, which is like 20 miles away from Charlotte uptown.
What kind of project is it?
The project in Charlotte market, it's a multifamily housing project. And whereas in the South Boston, it's a condominium project. It's actually a mixed development project in South Boston.
Okay. All right. So you don't really have hospitality per se. So how far in construction have you gone along in either of your projects?
So we don't have a project surrounding a hospitality. Actually, we had a project which is being permitted to a hospitality, I would say, but we haven't pulled the plug on that yet because of the TA rules on that one.
Right. Well, kind of a good thing, perhaps, because I think hospitality is probably faring the worst out of all right now.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. And given that the market that we are in is at a multifamily housing project and the condominiums, South Boston, being a Boston, it's completely a different market. I'll get to that. But the Charlotte market, which we are building here is or developing is, it's right now in the construction phase. I would say in the development phase, like almost the site development has been done and they're about to go into the vertical. So being in the construction in the Concord market, there is no actual restrictions because the construction is still an essential, it's considered as an essential in that market. The construction has definitely been a slower path, the things are still moving at a pace that we didn't expect to that a pace. So things are going good, but this project being as somewhere between a Class A and Class B apartments, so that definitely puts us in a better spot.
What do you mean by Class A and Class B? I mean a slightly lower standard?
So yes, it's a new product, it's a new development, but at an affordable price, right? So it's not an affordable project, but we are putting that at dollar per square foot in that market is somewhere around $1.20, but we're giving it around $5 to $10 per square foot. That's where we are renting it, and that's where our cash flow, projected cash flow, is also.
And we still
make with a 6.5 cap rate, we still make good returns on that one. And we're also expecting at least a 90% occupancy for all the newer developments in that neighborhood. There is for us, the advantage in that market or in that neighborhood is that because there is no recent new developments. Everything was being done either prior to 2000 or a couple projects which were redeveloped in the late 2000, like 2004 and 2005.
Yeah, I see. So, Sushant, you don't see any downturn at all because of the whole coronavirus?
No, in the point of financials or anything, but definitely would say a little bit the construction process has been slowed down a little bit because we're taking more precautions on the project side too.
Yeah.
But when it comes to the guidelines, that's where it is slowing us down, but nothing else in perspective of the financials or in any other aspects of the development.
Oh, wonderful. It's good to have such a positive outlook. So this is the message that you are giving your investors who obviously are concerned.
Yes, totally right. And there was a little concern for the investors on the South Boston project because that's totally different and completely different sector of the project. So it is a condominium project. So they were a little worried about how the market and the housing market is shaping it on in the Boston market. But as of right now, we haven't even gone into the marketing phase of the South Boston project. We just went with the demolition because the project was started late in 2019, October 2019 is when we finally wrapped up the whole purchase sale agreements and finalized the EB5 investments as well, and also the financing pieces, everything. So we're so early into the project that we
it's
have
a,
so much of room.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And also we're looking at this right now. We have from the first quarter of 2020. And we're looking at the reports from Warren Residential as well as, right? So the prices actually increased similar, same quarter 2019 to 2020, first quarter is 13.6% that the average sales price has been increased. And yeah, given the different market at in 2019, in 2020, actually, even if you look at the first quarter, January, February, March, it's pretty much we see that there is never a downturn of this one. Because our project are shaped in a way that it, we are projecting for the next year. So we don't see major impact to us. And that's what we are conveying back to our investors as well with all the numbers and with our investment numbers and as well as the projections that we had.
And hopefully the market will pick up by next year anyway, so there really wouldn't be too much of a downturn.
Exactly. By the time we go for the marketing, I think late in this year, we would imagine and also we're predicting that we will be placed in a better spot where we can go for the marketing.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much, Sushant. It's wonderful to have you on our show and to give a different perspective, but a perspective from a developer as opposed to a regional center.
It's my pleasure.
And we now have with us Rich Marquardt from LCP Group. Welcome, Rich.
Thank you, Mona, and thanks for having me today.
Where are you calling from?
I actually live in Connecticut, Mona, but our offices are based in New York, so we're taking all precautions and everybody is working from home, obviously.
Yes, obviously. I do know you do have a project in New York and you have a project in Florida. Perhaps you want to expand a little. What kind of projects?
Yeah, sure. We have projects all across the country, Mona, and I think right now, some of the biggest projects we have, one is in New York and one is in Florida, as you said. The good news for both of our projects in particular is that both are still under construction. Oh. And in the case of Florida, there are stay-at-home restrictions, but essential businesses are still allowed to operate. And an essential business in Florida includes ongoing construction. So,
is it hospitality in both, or
it is a hotel in Florida, and the project in New York is a mixed-use condominium and retail investment.
Well, that's kind of safer because there's always a need. There's always a demand for residential and mixed use in New York City.
Yes, I mean we are based here in New York City in Westchester. We strongly believe in New York. We believe in its resiliency, and you know it's bounced back from other economic crises before, and we believe it'll come back and hopefully stronger than ever. And you know, the good news is with our deal being under construction, the construction, even though it may be paused for a short period of time, it's going to be able to come back up. And hopefully by the time the condos go into the market and the retail requires tenants to come in, you know, we're going to be at a point where the markets have come back somewhat.
That's actually a very positive sign. I was reading in the Sunday papers that it may not be as long as people think, and maybe by the middle of next year or early next year, we might see the markets come back to where they were.
Yeah, we're hoping that's true as well. I think, you know, we were hoping for the V curve come back where it was sort of a sharp decline and then a quick bounce back. It might be more of a U-shaped curve and take a little bit longer than everyone originally anticipated, but we're optimistic. We hope things come back sooner than later, obviously, as everyone else does.
Right. Have you managed to take advantage of any of the government programs?
We have, as a company, as a small business company, we have been able to take advantage. We actually own 4 hotels, and we were able to get some relief from the Paycheck Protection Program. But yeah, our hotels are taking advantage of that. Some of our clients and borrowers and relationships that we deal with are taking advantage of that. And that's one great thing about the United States is that they have clearly shown and will continue to show, I hope, that they will support small businesses, individuals, and corporations through the crisis. And many other countries may not provide this type of stimulus package that America
Well, they may not have that ability. That's a really good
right.
point. Yeah.
Right.
So how are you handling your investors right now? I'm sure they're panicked too.
Well, I don't think a lot of our investors are panicked, and some are certainly concerned. But what we're doing is just staying in constant communication with our people and telling them exactly what the updates are. If there's an issue, we report an issue. If there's a concern, we report that. But knock on wood, to date, you know, everything has continued to pay on loans. The investments are still under construction in some cases, and things hopefully will bounce back and sooner than later, and get back to life as normal. And Mona, just to add here, the LCP Group, we've been around for over 45 years investing in commercial real estate projects. And we feel
45 years has been well before the EB5 began.
Well before EB5. So we have, let's just say we have some experience in the up and down markets. And, you know, we've always made it out safe and still here. So we believe we'll make it through this one as well. And I would just say I encourage investors across the board, and whether you're EB5 or not, to get in touch with your sponsors and ask for information, ask for updates on projects if you're concerned. And, you know, real-time information is important and key to understanding and maybe relieving some of your stress.
I agree. And I think it's also important for the regional centers to be proactive in this, because the last thing you want is anxious investors. And then, of course, everybody is concerned. And then the project or real estate or regional center who haven't got time to deal with you. I mean, that's not nice. But believe it or not, there are quite a few who've reached out to us and said that they're not getting any response. So I think it's important.
Well, that's really surprising and unfortunate.
Thanks, Rich. Great having you on our show.
Thank you so much, Mona.
Hi, Henry. Thank you for coming on to the show.
Thank you for having me.
So, Henry, your regional center, American Life, AmLife, it's one of the oldest regional centers.
Actually, I think it is the oldest.
Yeah. How long have you been around?
Since 1996.
Wow. Okay. Then that is the oldest. For now, as you know, with this project that we're doing, we're really asking all the different regional centers out there how they are coping. And I know you have projects in California and hospitality projects in Seattle. So please give us the hard facts. What's happening?
Well, the hotels in Atlanta, Seattle, and downtown LA are kind of limping along. We get some revenue, but we made the decision that it's actually cheaper to stay open and lose $30,000 to $40,000 a month, and we're sufficiently capitalized to do that, than shutting down, getting off the grid, because then you're not part of the reservation system. And when it starts up, the reservation system's like any online system. It takes time to ramp up. So it would actually be more expensive to shut down than it would be to keep them open.
That's really interesting, because I haven't heard that before. So I'm intrigued. Because at the moment, obviously, we're on lockdown, but it's not going to last forever. It can't. It has to. We have to start up again. But it's going to take people a long while, Henry, before they start going back into hotels. Hospitality businesses are going to really take a hit.
It's going to take 90 days or so. We budgeted for that. You know, we don't have any debt, which makes it a lot easier to cope with this.
Yeah, definitely.
We have more than no business. There's in Lancaster, California, that hotel's doing reasonable because it's all government contractors and they're still working. It's all defense contractors. The problem in Seattle is the April through end of October is cruise season. People fly to Seattle, then go to Alaska.
Yes.
And that's a big deal. And we're 100% occupied on those months. That's the gravy. This year, I doubt there's going to be an Alaska season at all. I mean, I'm a fisherman. I go up to Alaska 3 or 4 times a year. And I'm being told, don't bother.
Yeah. Wow. Well, it's good to know. But at the same time, everybody's in the same boat. But what we really want to do is to make sure our EB5 listeners are listening to see how each business is coping. And it sounds to me as though, because you are really an old hand at this, you know your stuff, you know the business, you're prepared for emergencies.
Yeah. And we got approved for the PPP loans through SBA. So that's 2.5 months payroll.
Well, that certainly helps.
No, that helps.
Yeah.
Yeah. And to the extent you don't use it for payroll, it's a loan of 1%. So it's not a tragedy if you don't, because we laid off so many people and you can't hire, I'm not going to hire back a bunch of people that I don't need.
That's right.
And have them sit around and do nothing. So the truth's somewhere in between, but we hired enough back to keep a skeleton staff. And boarding up a hotel is not an easy thing, Mona. I mean, there's a lot of systems in a hotel, right?
Yeah.
You have to shut them all down and then start them all up. And then your key guy goes and finds another job. It's just easier to keep it going.
Yeah, no, I hear you. Well, thank you anyway. It's good. You wanted to send any messages out to your existing investors?
Well, no one's going to lose anything. our distributions for first quarter, we're holding back because we don't know how long this is going to last. We have a lot of tenants asking for abatement, deferment. And what we're giving them is 60 days deferment, but they have to pay the what we call triple nets, which is tax, insurance, utilities. That's not a profit center.
Yeah.
And as long as they pay that, we won't have distributions.
But
and
the distributions, the capital is safe. I think that's the important thing.
Yeah. And a lot of people live on these distributions. You would be really surprised. And they run from 4 to 6%, which in today's world is not bad.
Yeah.
But you got to maintain liquidity because, you know, put it bluntly, governments can do a lot of stupid stuff in a crisis and you never know what you're going to do.
Thank you so much, Henry. We appreciate it very much.
And, thank you, Mona.
And we welcome you to come back and speak on one of our regular podcast episodes.
Sure, I'd love to. Thank you.
Hello, George. Welcome to EB5 Investment Voice.
Hi, Mona. How are you? Hopefully you are safe and well.
Yes, thank you. So your regional center is located where?
My regional center is located in Queens, New York City. And most of my projects are in Queens side.
And the name of your regional center is Century?
Century New York City Regional Center.
Okay. So as you know, we are talking to lots of different regional centers and projects right now to find out what's going on, what people are doing in this particular time. So right now, I presume you're not doing anything.
All of my projects are on hold right now due to the governor's executive order to stay home. Right now, we are working, all of my staff, office staffs, they are remotely working from home. And all the job sites are closed right now.
Okay. Well, when do you expect you'll be ready to go back?
We're waiting for the governor to lift the stay-at-home order. My guess is sometime in May. And I think governor probably will have an announcement because last time he said that the April 15th, which is today, he's going to come out with a new plan to reevaluate stay-at-home order to see if he's going to extend it.
Once it extends, do you see there being a problem in completing your projects as they're all construction projects or even selling the properties?
I don't see that at all. It's just putting the project on hold for a few weeks. And at the same time, all of my workers and then they are standing by, just waiting for the governor to lift the order. And once that is lifted, we're going to go full speed ahead to complete the project.
Well, that's very good to know. And I'm sure that's going to give a lot of assurance to all of your investors. One quick point, I think when we were discussing earlier, you mentioned that perhaps construction sites may be considered essential business and you may have the lift order earlier than expected.
We know that the affordable housing projects are considered as the essential business. I just heard that from another a friend of mine who's an attorney, and her clients are actually applying to open the hotel project sites. We're going to look at that option and to find out if it's true. If it is true, and then so we actually have two projects we can open earlier.
Oh, that would be certainly good. Okay. Well, thank you, George. I'm sure everybody is pleased to know that you're fine, even though you're really at the epicenter, because although Manhattan has taken the brunt, Queens, New York has also had really heavy tolls in this whole coronavirus battle.
Yes, all of us are staying home, and then mostly we will be spending quite some time watching the news and then looking at the looking at the numbers and stuff. And then it's staggering. We just have to be very cautious, whatever we do.
Yeah. Well, stay safe. Thank you very much for coming on Investment Voice.
Thank you so much, Mona. You stay safe and be healthy.
And now I'd like to welcome Dan Healy from Civitas. Welcome, Dan, to EB5 Investment Voice.
Thank you so much for having me.
So, Dan, are you currently in Texas?
Yes.
We know that many people are anxious, and we really want to hear your thoughts on the situation, Dan. Firstly, you have projects all over the country. I know you have a New York City project.
Yes, that's correct. We have projects on both coasts, Denver, Miami, throughout Texas.
Right. And you are also into hospitality, which has taken a huge tumble.
Yes, we're very active in hotels, both in EB5 and outside of EB5.
Outside EB5, you mean private equity?
Correct, yes.
All right. So how have your projects fared at this point?
From an EB5 perspective, they're all doing quite well in that they have been constructed on time. And the job creation is more than accounted for. Of course, from a financial perspective, this is the most difficult environment that the hospitality industry has ever faced. So we are in the same boat that the entire industry is in. In some of the markets where we have properties, we are unable to open. We've been ordered closed. And in others, it's just a very, very difficult market. Having said that, though, this is a systemic issue. It's not something that we had any ability to,
Of course not. Of course.
So I'm hopeful that there's going to be kind of a systemic solution. In the meantime, we're making sure that we do everything we can to protect our capital. And so far, it's going okay.
So Dan, Civitas was started in 2008. I believe you're the original founder. That was right at the same time as the economic meltdown.
Yes, this firm, Civitas Capital, was born of the Great Recession. We, 10 years ago, saw that with the capital markets going completely illiquid in the wake of Lehman Brothers failing and the financial crisis, that we saw that EB5 could be a source of liquidity for projects that otherwise just were not going to happen generally or would be very difficult. That was the insight that resulted in creating Civitas Capital with my partner, Rafael and Chia.
We don't know how long there will be a recession or what kind of recession we are going to have, but we do know for sure that COVID-19 is going to bring on a recession. Do you have any thoughts relating to projects, returning capital, and just EB5 in general?
My thinking is that EB5 can and should play a similar role as it did the last time around, only much, much more effectively. 10 years ago, the number of players in the industry was a handful. Now there are regional centers that focus on specific geographic areas, different types of industries. And, EB5 Capital is not correlated with the broader markets, generally speaking. So we certainly expect to be active. Now, of course, we can only be active to a limited degree, given the situation with retrogression and some of the, the tightening associated with the new regulations that went into effect in last November.
That's a good point, Dan. I do think that EB5 is a solution. Do you have any thoughts on different projects or the projects which are currently in the market who are unable to repay capital or may be unable to repay capital to their investors because of COVID-19?
Certainly, that doesn't surprise me. I mean, anytime you have a shock like this, an external shock to the economy like this, EB5 or not, you're going to have people, projects, investments that run into trouble. One of the reasons that I'm proud of the performance of our firm in this difficult time is because we're now testing pretty much all of the risk analysis and the underwriting that my investment team did at the beginning of all of these EB5 projects and investments that we closed several years ago. And very pleased, frankly, that we don't find ourselves in a position where we are looking at losing money. Certainly, things are going to be difficult, and it may well be the case, with us, and I know with others, that some of our investments may be extended for a longer period while the recovery takes place. That's likely to be the case in hospitality, for example, but that's what I would expect.
Yeah, that's what we have basically seen across the board. Investors may have to be a little patient. But the point is that even if they're being patient, that at some point they would get their capital back. That, I think, is the important point that they need to understand.
Right.
Yeah. So, Dan, thank you very much. We really appreciate your views. And thank you very much for coming on Investment Voice.
I appreciate it, Mona. Thank you for having me.
there you have it, EB5 Investment Boys listener. Over a dozen regional centers and developers have helped contribute to this episode that has, understandably, taken a couple weeks to get to you. And I'm confident in saying that this episode is a first of its kind in our industry. We've explored a lot in our time together. We've learned that the hospitality industry, though has been greatly affected in this difficult environment, has the combined history of surviving past recessions. Some have chosen to remain open instead of shutting down by furloughing some seasonal employees and leveraging the Paycheck Protection Program. For those that are still being built, it turns out that in many cases, construction is considered essential. And for those areas where it's not, some construction might be on pause, but they'll come back. People will get back to work so that others can enjoy the fruits of their labor. Speaking of essential, you know what other projects have essential workers? Affordable housing projects, senior living communities, and we've heard from both of those. We've also heard from real estate technology, and though perhaps not essential, is playing its own vital role in our recovery, and their business is booming because of it. Look, many of us are tired of hearing the term new normal, but I think it does illustrate that we will all bounce back, even if it means the world and EB5 projects are a little different going forward. Truth is, COVID-19 has become a surprise pop quiz for all businesses, and these EB5 opportunities are making the most of it. I'd like to thank the following people for contributing to this episode of EB5 Investment Voice: Noreen Hogan of CMB, Glenn LaMatana of NRIA, Steve Sternisa of Cleveland International Fund, Joan William of Watercrest, Umesh Haragopal of PropMix, Doug Anderson of Pacific Group, Devin Williams of EB5 Global, Sebastian Stubb of Pine State Economic Development Corporation, Shushant Sharabuddy of Eagle Eye Property Group, Rich Marquardt of Live in America LCP Group, Henry Lieberman of American Life, George Sue of Century Development Group, and Dan Healy of Civitas. And of course, a huge thank you to our own Rebecca Singh and Mona Shaw for making this episode possible. We'll catch up with you again next time on EB5 Investment Voice. Thank you for being with us today on EB5 Investment Voice. The topics presented in this podcast is informational in nature and is not to be taken as specific legal advice. If you have questions on the topics presented in this episode or other investment immigration needs, please contact Mona Shaw & Associates. Mona and her attorney staff can be reached at mshawlaw.com. That's mshahlaw.com. Make sure you don't miss our next episode focusing on a different aspect of the EB5 program by subscribing to the podcast. While you're at it, leave us a rating on iTunes. If you really found this episode valuable, share it with someone else that could benefit from this information. Until then, I'll see you on the next episode of EB5 Investment Voice.